The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks whip routes should be called whippets. The dog breed. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. I am joined this week by my friend. It's been a while since he's been on the show. Derek Klassen of Bleacher Report, of Reception Perception, which I want to highlight because Matt Harmon just gave me an account and it is awesome. I'm going to be using it so much. So a little plug for Reception Perception, great data based on charting receivers. Derek Klassen, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me back. And yeah, I will also tout Reception Perception a little bit. Matt's charting receivers is outstanding on there. I'm going to be charting every NFL quarterback this offseason. So,
oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, yes. So I've already started a little bit. I've only gotten through like two guys, but we're getting there.
Which two guys have you gotten through, if you don't mind?
Patrick Mahomes, you got to start with the best. Listen, yeah. when you've been charting like the Joe Miltons and the Michael Pratts of the college world, you got to come back and just get the good stuff immediately. Yeah. So I've done Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. So the best in the world and then also the MVP. So pretty good places.
That is fun. We're not talking about those quarterbacks today. We are going to be talking today about quarterbacks who have not played a single snap in the NFL. The rookie quarterbacks who are drafted six in the first round this year. And this is like my favorite part about the draft, which is not trying to predict what happens, but actually talking about what is to come based on factual data, which is where these quarterbacks actually landed, the situations they're walking into, the teammates that they'll be playing with, their supporting casts. We're going to talk about scheme, the play callers, what offenses we think they should be running for these quarterbacks. I'm really excited to get into this because, you know, with someone like, I don't know, Michael Penix Jr. or Bo Nix, you couldn't really do this before the draft because you had no idea where they were going to go. We knew where Caleb was going to go and most likely Jaden Daniels. But this is a real opportunity to actually talk about these quarterbacks in concrete terms. And Derek, it strikes me as more important than maybe I would have thought in past years. This is the first time I'm doing this, by the way, because as I look back at the quarterbacks, especially the ones drafted last season, it becomes increasingly apparent. This is such a normie football take, but it's true. Situation really is so significant when it comes to the first years for these guys. I'll just say, I think we really dramatically underestimated how bad the Panther situation was that Bryce Young was walking to. I think we maybe underestimated how good in some ways the Texans were, although obviously CJ Stroud was amazing and elevated the supporting cast. So I'm excited to go through all of these quarterbacks and think about that now. I mean, how do you feel generally about sort of looking at rookie quarterbacks through this lens?
No, I think it's a great point. And, you know, one guy you didn't mention from last year, Anthony Richardson. So I liked Richardson as a prospect. I thought he wasn't quite as raw as people said that he was. I think, you know, 1 year starter, maybe he needed to clean up some footwork. He has a couple of sprays, but to me, he had a lot of the bones, but still kind of a volatile prospect maybe. But if you had told me pre-draft, like, yeah, he's going to go to the Colts, the Colts are going to fix their offensive line and Shane Steichen's going to be his play caller, I'd have been like, I might have raised his grade a little bit if I knew all of that. But with the draft, you just don't have all of this information. And that's why you make a great point, like talking about the draft before you know all their teams, which in this class, you know, 1.5, we probably knew between Caleb and then probably Jaden Daniels. The other guys, it was kind of like, who knows? Like even the Patriots up until the last minute, we weren't entirely sure if they were going to do the Drake May thing. But now that we know, it's a completely different ballgame for a lot of these guys.
And the circumstances changed during the course of the draft. The Bears drafting Rome Odunze, pick 9, totally changes how we look at this offense. The Patriots invested pretty heavily in their wide receiver core. The types of players they took, very interesting. So yeah, I'm excited to dig into this. I think we should start at the top and work our way down. We are going to talk about all six quarterbacks. I know you have a lot of thoughts on Rattler, so we'll do a quick nod to Rattler. Caleb to me is actually, so for purpose of this, I went through all these quarterbacks. I looked at their depth charts to figure, just remind myself who's on the team, thought about the play calling, et cetera. Caleb was the hardest actually, in some ways, not the hardest, to project his circumstances, but the hardest for me to sort of build a case for what type of offense he should be in, because I think of all these quarterbacks, and this is why he was taken first, he kind of works in any offense. That's my opinion based on watching him. And I think I kind of joked during the pre-draft process where Caleb is just so assuredly number one, we're like not really talking about him enough. So this is the point now where we actually get to really talk about him and what kind of offense is best for him. We alluded to Odunze. I mean, this is an unbelievable group of skill players around him. Just to remind people, you got DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and Rome Odunze. Behind them, the depth is Velus Jones, Tyler Scott, Dante Pettis. You have Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett, quiet signing at tight end. The running back room, I mean, DeAndre Swift, I didn't really think that was necessary because I liked their existing running back room. Now it's like an unbelievable group with Khalil Herbert and Roschon Johnson. And then the offensive line, they're pretty much, you know, it's pretty similar with their stick. They decided to stick with Braxton Jones, left tackle. You have Fallon Jenkins, Ryan Bates, Nate Davis, Darnell Wright. Okay, so that's the group. Shane Waldron comes in as the offensive coordinator. Before we get to kind of what's best for Williams, I get asked a lot, what is a Shane Waldron offense? Because he was, of course, the offensive coordinator for Seattle for a few years. And under him, it was a pretty dramatic change. I think more to do with the change at quarterback because of what the style of quarterback Geno Smith is just so dramatically different from Russell Wilson. So they had to really change things for Smith. But just to kind of describe it, he does come from the Sean McVay tree. There is some of that DNA in terms of the running game, the zone running game, although there was a little bit of diversity there in Seattle. With Geno, pretty average play action rate, pretty average blend of gun versus under center. Used a lot of pistol, which I just think is really interesting. A lot of designed rollouts, also very interesting. And a decent amount of motion. The other thing that gets a lot of attention is they put a lot of tight ends on the field. Personally, I think that's less about Waldron's philosophy and more about deficiencies in the offensive line in Seattle and so that. So that's everything. Derek, am I missing anything on Waldron? And of all the things I just said, is there anything that immediately clicks for you when you think about what they should run with Caleb Williams?
You know, I'm glad you brought up the tight ends thing. And this was one of my biggest gripes with the Seattle offense is, so Waldron does come from like the Sean McVay thing, but in Seattle, so like what makes the Sean McVay offense? Everyone that plays in the slot for them can block. Like Cooper Kupp can block, Robert Woods could block for a while, Puka Nacua, that dude can block his ass off. Nobody in Seattle's receiving core really blocks like that. Like Tyler Lockett is a little bit smaller. DK Metcalf doesn't really block like that. Jackson Smith and Jigba, like, he'll try, but he's a little bit on the lighter side and doesn't really have that caliber of strength. So I think that's why they always played in like wider formations than you typically see from some of these Sean McVay offenses. Yes. And why when they wanted blocking, they were like, all right, we got to go 13 personnel and get a bunch of tight ends on the field. That does make this Chicago room a little bit interesting, though, because I think one, Cole Kmet is probably a better blocker than what the Seahawks were getting out of a lot of their tight ends last year. Also, Rome Odunze. That dude will throw down. He will throw down. Like, I don't think it's going to be look like one for one what the Rams are doing with Puka Nacua or anything in terms of overall role, but you can really, you know, bump Odunze inside a little bit and I think use him in some of those ways. And I think that's going to unlock a lot of flexibility for Waldron as a play caller, at least in terms of the passing game and some of the stuff they're allowed to align in. Like I said, I loved their passing game as an idea where they were like five-step drop, we're really aggressive, we want to throw down the field. But because they were locked into all these super spread formations, it kind of just felt stagnant at times, mm-hmm. which was especially a problem with some of the offensive line play last year. But I think with this, you know, receiving core where they've got two tight ends that they can use who can do a bunch of different stuff, all the receivers can do a bunch of different stuff. I kind of want to see what Waldron can do with all these new pieces. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, I think I don't want to over tout Caleb Williams. When I said at the beginning, I think he can do anything, I meant more, I viewed him as the most scheme agnostic quarterback of the entire class. And Waldron, we have seen different offenses. We've seen different offenses in recent years with Sean McVay's Rams. And I see things that would work from kind of every iteration. Like I talked about the use of pistol, the under center, the play action, the boot game, some of the stuff that they do with, you know, heavier groupings. All of that makes sense. But I also think you can spread things out with Caleb and just ask him to sling it around the field the way we saw with Stafford in when he came to the Rams and they put him in more empty more often and dramatically cut back on the play action rate. To me, it's yes, a lot about Caleb's skill set, but it's, and this kind of goes off what you said, a lot of it is about just sort of, you have this unbelievable, one of the best 1-2-3 punches of receiver at receiver in the NFL. Like you don't, just because you use multiple tight ends in Seattle, you should not, like, they should be on the field most of the time. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, again, to go back to the Rams example, this is a very 11 personnel centric offense. I think the question for Caleb too is really just not what is he capable of, because like I said, I think he's capable of everything, but how do you make sure you instill good habits for him as a quarterback year one? How do you get him to play on time without removing what makes him great and allowing for some creativity and whatnot? That to me is almost like the most important task for Waldron, more than, you know, we're going to have this personnel grouping and this type of offense and such forth, and just because I think he can do anything.
I honestly think the first step for getting Caleb to be more, you know, normal, if that's the way you want to put it.
Why can't you be normal?
Right, exactly. I think probably the best way for them to do that, my step one was like, just get receivers who are just like right place, right time, know how to play the game. Keenan Allen is very good at that. That is exactly what he is. I mean, that's what he's always been, but especially at this point in his career, that's what he is. That's what Roma Dunze is. Like, Roma Dunze is right place, right time, great route runner, great hands. Like, he's just a very reliable, stable player. And I think a player that Caleb is never going to be like, is he going to be at the wrong spot? Like, do I have to just go create? Do I trust him to be here? Yada, yada, yada. I don't think that's ever going to be a problem with Dunze and Allen. And then DJ Moore, I'm not saying he's like a wild player. He's not quite in that tier with those guys in terms of that, but he's also a veteran who knows what he's doing. He knows what's going on. So like, it seems to me they have built a receiving core that is perfect for being like, hey man, you can just trust these guys to play the game. Whereas I think at USC, that wasn't always the case. And then I think to the other point about USC, I think just having the structure of an NFL offense where there's more timing, there's more like, hey man, get under center, 7-step drop, rip this dig route, like that type of thing, that really didn't exist in his college offense with Lincoln Riley, especially behind the offensive line that he was playing behind. And especially with some of like the cheese RPOs that they were just spamming over and over again. Like, it kind of just got to a point where Caleb didn't even have that many like NFL timing type of concepts in the offense. And so I think some people have taken that as like, oh, is he ever going to be able to do it? You know, he was so backyard at USC. I take it as like, I think immediately when he gets NFL structure and has this type of talent around him, I think he's actually going to take to it pretty well. And, you know, maybe it takes 1 year where he's still a little up and down, but I think by year two, year three, he's going to be pretty locked into being able to do the standard NFL quarterback type stuff.
I was messing around a little bit with the reception website. This is an ad for, but before this morning, because I just got my login, and guess which receiver in the NFL, it's very obvious from what we're talking about, had the highest success rate on slants? Keenan Allen.
Like, that's probably been true for like a decade.
Yeah, I know, right? I really, like, they could not have traded for a better player to do exactly what you need for Caleb Williams to have, to build immediate trust. If I throw this on time, he will be open, he will catch the football. Like, it, and I think, like, when we talk about, I've talked about this a lot with Bryce, you could see him develop bad habits over the course of the season as his trust correctly eroded in his receiving group. And that's, you know, there's some of that was on Bryce. But it was very visible. Like, he was like, oh, I can't throw with anticipation because he's got, the value for a rookie quarterback of having a guy who gets open quickly and does all the little things required, those like little veteran moves, to run that short/intermediate game on a high level. Keenan Allen is that guy. It is just fabulous, for him. So I guess, you know, we feel really good about skill players. I think with Waldron, I think we're both in agreement. Like, there's a lot. It's almost more about like, how do I make sure I have this like all-star team of skill players? What is the best sort of combination of starters? You know, how should I use them or whatnot? The question that gets brought up a little bit is, you know, is this offensive line good enough? I'll say this: ESPN's metrics love the Bears' offensive line, second in run block win rate, fifth in pass block win rate. I don't know if that squares entirely with how I view them, but I do think they are good, and a lot of the sacks were Justin Fields' fault. So I wouldn't be surprised if they look pretty solid, and I think that's a reason why that they were comfortable sticking with Jones at left tackle. I guess my final question for you, for Williams, is this: like, as you look around the NFL, because, you know, he gets compared to Mahomes and Rodgers, or is there any offense of the last 5 years or so that you think, oh man, I'd love to see Caleb Williams running that particular offense, since we've established that Waldron really can mean a lot of different things?
I mean, so this guy got fired midseason, so it sounds crazy, but like what Ken Dorsey was doing with Josh Allen, I think kind of almost one-to-one fits with what you want to do with Caleb. Like, what's funny about watching, because I just started charting Josh Allen, and there will be drives where they'll start with like RPO, then they'll immediately get under center, do play action shot play, then they'll go straight into empty, and then the next play will be like quarterback run. Caleb can do all of that, and like that whiplash of going like one thing to the next and having that kind of variety in the offense, I think is really valuable for a player like Caleb. And like, even though over the past few years Buffalo has done better to like, we're going to get under center a little bit more, we're going to get heavier, we're going to run the ball, at the core of the offense, it is still Josh Allen, four wide, let's go sling it. I think at the end of the day, that is kind of what you're going to want to have to do with Caleb. Like, you're going to want to do some of the more under center stuff and get him to have that be a part of his game. But at the end of the day, you let a guy with that kind of talent, that kind of creativity, throw as many times as he can from gun and just kind of let him sling it. So I think some approximation of what the Bills have done and really developed their offense, I think that's kind of what you want to do with Caleb.
I do think I mentioned at the top that Waldron used a pretty high rate for the NFL pistol in Seattle. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of that too with the Bears. And actually, like with a lot of these rookie quarterbacks, as I was thinking through as they kind of transitioned into the league, you know, none of them outside of JJ McCarthy were really, you know, under center guys in college. It's different game. But I do think the pistol is something we will see more often. Well, that's a good transition to Jaden Daniels. So more complicated situation that our guy Jaden's walking into. Good group of wide receivers. Terry McLaurin, legit number one. Jahan Dotson, who I like. After him, you got a mix of Dyami Brown, Zacchaeus. They drafted Luke McCaffrey. I have no opinion on him. Tight end, I totally forgot that they signed Zach Ertz, but they signed Zach Ertz. And then they drafted,
I also forgot that,
Ben Sinnott. I think I'm saying his name right. Running back group, you have Ryan Robinson, Rodriguez, you bring in Austin Eckler, pass catching option. All that's pretty good. The offensive line.
Yeah. So,
I feel like this is a really under discussed story. And I mentioned it. I did a pod after the draft on winners and question marks and with Brett Coleman. And we talked about the Commanders. And I was like, I love the players they drafted. Johnny Newton's like one of my favorites, Mike Samuels, amazing players, but like they really, you know, they didn't do the thing we all thought they were going to do, which was trade up. I guess they tried to get a left tackle. So you're looking right now at Cornelius Lucas, maybe Cosme at left tackle. I don't know. I'd heard that. It's Allegretti, Nick Allegretti for the Chiefs. They have Tyler Biadasz, who's a good player, Andrew Wiley. Now there still are some free agents out there. Donovan Smith is like the player who gets mentioned for every team right now. So good for him for waiting to sign someone. There's a bunch of teams
he's kind of cornered the market on that.
Dude, if I'm the Commanders, I go sign Donovan Smith. Not that he's like a perfect player, but this is, before we get to even scheme and whatever, that is something that could derail this entire thing if they don't get it figured out.
Yeah, it's like as the line is now, like if they don't sign anybody, trade for any whatever anybody, whatever, they would be like my favorites to be the worst offensive line in football. Because they were already one of the worst last year, and then they didn't really do a whole lot to clean it up. And I think part of why it hasn't been talked about as much is last year, a lot of people brush it off as like, oh, you know, Sam Howell, he just holds the ball all the time, and he just, you know, he likes to take sacks. That's just who he is. And while that is true, and a lot of the sacks were his fault, this offensive line, though, still could not play. They could not run block. They could not pass block. Like, it just, the entire offensive infrastructure crumbled over the course of the year because this unit just couldn't put it together. And then, like you said, they didn't really address it in the draft at all, which is crazy in a draft class that probably the strongest position top to bottom was offensive line. Like, so many guys went top 75 at every single position, at tackle, guard, center. Obviously they signed Biotis, so they didn't need a center, but at guard and tackle, there were plenty of options they could have went for. And they just didn't end up with any of them. So this to me is, I think particularly with Daniels and some of the concerns that I have with him, for them to have what is probably a bottom five offensive line, maybe the worst in football, it's very, very concerning to me. Kind of scares me.
So with Daniels, there's, you know, we talked about him pre-draft, concerns about build and pressure to sack rate, throwing over the middle of the field. But I think there is a lot, there's obviously a lot to like, but there are things that are very clear watching his tape that not only translate to the NFL, but give you kind of, I would say, a roadmap for what this offense should look like under Cliff Kingsbury, who, you know, didn't have like the most successful end in Arizona. But I think it'll be interesting to see what he's learned in his time away and what sort of offense he wants to run with Daniels. My feeling, Derek, is you should borrow pretty heavily from the Philadelphia Eagles. This is, I keep going back to this, and it was funny. Ahead of the draft, I did a segment highlighting the LSU RPO game, and there's just so much Eagles stuff. The slide that the Eagles run all the time, where Jalen, it's sort of like the run, you know, he's a threat to keep. They should borrow that precipitously. I don't know. They should be running draws with him. Obviously, zone read. I know that, you know, there's concerns about size, but I think you gotta go pretty heavily on QB run, especially year one. And then again, similarly to the Eagles, so you're running sort of like the power spread, right? You are attacking downfield outside the numbers, which is something that Jaden Daniels is very, very good at.
I think the Eagles call is perfect, because if you just like spark notes, you know, like what is Jalen Hurts, it's like, okay, beautiful downfield passer, generally accurate to all three levels when he does want to make certain throws. Maybe doesn't throw the middle of the field as well as some of the other top quarterbacks in the NFL. Throws quick game pretty well. Throws RPO game pretty well. And then obviously is a threat as a runner. You could copy paste pretty much all of that onto Jaden Daniels' profile. And so I think the Eagles call is perfect. You know, whether or not the Commanders immediately have the personnel to do exactly what the Eagles are going to do, I don't know, especially up front.
I think they have the receivers. I do think, you know, McLaurin and Dotson.
McLaurin, for sure.
Yeah, McLaurin, definitely. But yeah, it's the offensive line that concerns me.
Yeah, and that's where this gets sticky for me. Because Jalen Hurts, like, I think one of his biggest issues is he's not the best pocket manager. He's very much a quarterback where, like, when it gets a little crowded, he can start to feel the heat quickly, and he'll just want to bail and look to immediately scramble. The thing is, just when you have Lane Johnson, Jordan Mailata, like Jason Kelce, when all those guys are protecting you, that kind of just gets washed away and pushed to the side on more snaps than not. In Washington, he's going to be under duress all the time. And that's where I worry about really Jaden Daniels' like development arc as a whole. Because it's almost like what you said with Bryce last year, where like he instilled these bad habits of like, okay, I cannot trust these receivers. Yeah. And it kind of instilled his worst habit, which is like his timing was always weird to begin with. He always wanted to look to create. With Jaden Daniels, I almost wonder about the same thing, but in terms of pocket management, it's like, okay, well, if he just, that's already kind of his pain point, and then he's behind this offensive line that's going to put him under issues all the time, is he ever going to feel confident playing behind, you know, in NFL pockets and stuff.
Yeah, and I think there's an interesting distinction there to be drawn with the Hurts comparison, which, by the way, is like Jalen Hurts is a really, really good NFL quarterback. I know our last memory of him is not great, but like comparing Jaden Daniels to Jalen Hurts is like a good comp, people, if anyone's freaking out or if any Commanders fans or LSU fans are feeling defensive about it. But I think there's a thing that I think Hurts is better at and a thing that Daniels is better at. And it's the difference between pressure versus the blitz. Jaden Daniels, I thought in college, was really great against at diagnosing extra pressure. He's really, really smart, good at reading defenses, really, and I think his numbers reflect that against the blitz. Obviously, some of that, of course, is his surrounding cast in college. Pressure is the issue, right? And he wasn't under pressure very much because, again, the LSU offensive line was freaking awesome. But that's where I think, yeah, like, I think he has to kind of, even as Hurts has struggled at times, he still has to get to where Hurts is under pressure. I worry about the transition given the situation at LSU versus what we're talking about with this offensive line. LSU, their tackles are unreal.
Top 15 picks, like both of
legit
them.
Legit obsessed with that dude, Will Campbell. I actually, after watching Daniels, immediately texted Andrew Whitworth. No big deal. Humble brag. But I was like, because he's LSU. And I'm like, yo, have you watched, like, what are your thoughts on, you know, I forget his number, 7. I forgot. He had a cool number, actually. It's like a single digit or something.
I don't remember.
It's like, it's something weird. And he wrote back like a 500 word text about how amazing he thinks he is and how he's like so invested in him because they're, I guess they're from the same hometown. Oh, wow. In Louisiana. Yeah. So anyways, that dude is the truth. Pretty dramatic drop off for Jaden. So I guess my question for you is, I know we've been watching fans listening to this, like, okay, we get it. What can Cliff Kingsbury do to mitigate that?
I mean, a couple of things. I think one, just like simplifying the vertical game, almost like we just said with the Eagles, like their vertical game is not that interesting. It's just a lot of go balls and slot fades. But if you can call them right and time them right, that's perfectly fine. And Jaden Daniels, he throws them so well that even if it is kind of simple, if you throw them well enough, the defense still has to respect it all of the time. It's like the Joe Burrow thing. It's why he gets covered too all the time. And that was because, okay, it's very simple. They're just running go balls. But if he can throw it all the time, then we still have to worry about it. So I think that is going to be part of it. I think Cliff is going to have to do a really, really good job with his quick game stuff, because that is one area where I think Jaden Daniels is really good. Like, his timing and his accuracy in the quick game is outstanding, especially outside the numbers. That can get a little tricky maybe with Washington's receiving core because they don't have like the biggest, you know, outside the numbers type of guys. But I do think that they're going to want to lean into that. And then the other thing that I actually think is most interesting about Cliff, people imagine him as like, oh, he's Cliff Kingsbury, air raid offense, throw the ball around. His best stuff in Arizona was the run game, especially with the quarterback run game. That's like they were doing really cool stuff with like GT counter, like some of his QB run game stuff was sweet. And I think you very obviously can include Jaden Daniels in that in the same way that they were doing with Kyler Murray. And then you can obviously tag some RPO stuff onto that. So I think that is probably the way to do it, is kind of just keep the passing game as simple as possible in terms of just leaning into some quick game, maybe doing some empty four wide stuff, keeping the vertical game as easy as possible. Don't make him throw the middle of the field and hang in pockets right now. Like, that's something he will have to develop. But with this offensive line year one, just play the easy stuff and do the easy stuff. And I think that's going to be throwing quick game, RPOs, letting Jaden Daniels use his legs.
Definitely spread to run. Take advantage of the numbers advantage you have with Daniels. I think that the way forward is pretty clear. Okay, Drake May. So, interesting situation. I think it's in some ways, it's not great, obviously. It's not the quarterback. We're going to get to a couple who are in much better situations. Obviously, Williams is an amazing. I don't think it's quite as bad as people say. Maybe that's my Kendrick Bourne love and Jaden Polk fandom getting in my own way. But Like, here, first of all, let's start with the offensive line. Okay, they needed a left tackle. They should also be on the phone. Donovan Smith, man, whatever your agent is hearing right now, hold out. Hold the line, because a lot of teams need your services. I think there's a couple of free agents. There might be a couple that I'm missing. So I don't know who's playing left tackle. Kaden Wallace is the guy to draft. I don't know. But outside of left tackle, actually, I think that they're going to be okay. You brought back Nwenu, Cole Strange, Andrews, City Sow. They also sign Okorafor, so there's some depth. I'm not saying that it's a world-beating offensive line. It's not great, but I don't think it's a nightmare. The receiving group I alluded to, it's like the best group of twos and threes. You know, it's like such a nice, like if you took Ayuk, which I don't think that's not going to happen, or Higgins or whatever, and you put them in this receiver group, I would really like it, because Polk, Bourne, Demario Douglas, KJ Osborne, Javon Baker, who's an interesting player they drafted, Juju, they're some decent NFL players. They just don't have like a number one. I think that's the problem. Tight end, you got Hunter Henry, Austin Hooper, running back Stevenson and Gibson. They signed to Gibson. So before we get to the sort of scheme aspect of it under Alex Van Pelt, how do you regard the supporting cast in New England after the draft?
I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, it's not good, right? Like, this is not going to be, yes, he's going to walk in and have the Justin Herbert rookie year or whatever. Like, that's not going to happen. And that's okay. Like, this is, you draft a quarterback at three. This is for the long haul anyway. It's whatever. But it's really not that bad. Like you said, like outside of left tackle, I think the offensive line is plenty serviceable. Like Mike Nwenu, when he's healthy, is a really good player. City Sal, like, he probably needs to take another step before you can say that he's like a reliable player for them. But I think that that could absolutely happen. He's a very young player. And then Cole Strange, I think, is a very promising young player. So like this offensive line, probably not great, but I think it's better than some of the other offensive lines that some of these other rookies are going to have to play behind. Especially like we just mentioned, Jaden Daniels. Like, it's better than that, for sure. Like, these guys at least have a couple of guys who you maybe could make a Pro Bowl or something if things go right. And then the receiving room, like you mentioned, they don't have a one. If they could go snag a T. Higgins, a Brandon Ayuk, that would be wonderful. But the thing about this receiving core that I kind of like, even if, you know, there's some uncertainty, especially with the rookies, but everybody has a role. And that's, I kind of think, what I really like about the way that this is constructed. Like, Jalen Polk is your typical, like, ball winner. He can play X. He can play a little bit from the slot. But he's very much like a be in the right spot, go win me the ball 15 yards down the field. I think for a quarterback like Drake May, that was like them understanding the guy that they drafted and being like, we need to get a receiver who fits his skill set. And I think that that's great, especially when you watch Drake May at North Carolina. He tried to play as if he had one of those guys, and he never did. Well, in 2023, and he kind of did. In 2022, he had Josh Downs, right? Who kind of could fill that role. 2023, he had none of it, but he just kept doing it anyway. Yeah. And that's why I think somebody looked bad. But Jalen Polk, I think, is going to erase some of that for sure. And then Javon Baker, like, obviously fourth round, you don't know exactly what you're going to get, but he to me is like vertical X receiver, like almost kind of what they have in Kendrick Bourne, but like could potentially be better. I think he's a better route runner out of the gate potentially. So I like that for them. And then Pop Douglas, like, he's just him and KJ Osborne really are your underneath slot, like speed, yak, all this other stuff.
He's got juice, which is sorely missing in this.
He can pop, right? Like, yeah. And so none of these guys are like clear Pro Bowl players or anything. And even with the rookies, you don't know if they're going to hit their potential right away. But just the fact that everybody very obviously fits a role to me is like, okay, you can construct a competent offense with these pieces. It's not like this mismatch of random garbage like the Jaguars had in their first year with Trevor or anything like that.
Yeah. So that kind of brings us to the offensive coordinator. So it's Alex Van Pelt, who comes from Cleveland, worked with quarterbacks, which is obviously great for May to have a guy with that experience. We don't know exactly. He wasn't play caller, but I think, you know, the assumption is the Cleveland's DNA will be all over this offense, which would be a pretty big switch from, well, last like 20 years in New England, pretty defined identity. Tell me if I'm crazy. I think when May plays, he'll probably play. Let's be real. Honestly, you could say this about Brissett too, but when May plays, they should run the stuff they ran with Flacco in the second half of last year. Boot that big boy out. Deep shots off of play action. They were running RPOs with Flacco off of a very diverse run game, by the way. I think we think of Cleveland as being wide zone boot, but they actually were running all kinds of stuff last year. Let him attack downfield. I feel like it's a pretty good fit between the play caller, assuming that that's what he's, you know, sort of what he's going to do.
I think that's spot on, because honestly, and part of what made what they were doing with Flacco work, Flacco will just throw it hell or high water, dude. Like, he's not scared to throw the ball. And obviously that led to some ugly interceptions, but it also led to like throws that truthfully, not more than like a handful of other quarterbacks in the NFL were even willing to throw. Like, he had this just like, screw it, I'm playing with house money. And it unlocked like certain parts of the field that just weren't there. I think May is kind of walking in with that mentality of like, I can make any throw at any time from any pocket. Let's go sling it. And so I think if they walk in with that type of offense where they are booting him out and they're trying to throw vertically and they're trying to throw a bunch of like deep sail routes and deep corners and posts and all that stuff, that is the way to run the offense with Drake May. Like, I don't think you want to do the, you know, we're trying to attack for 8 yards every play. Like, that's not, eventually he'll have to grow up into that, right? Like, Mahomes eventually had to do it. Eventually Josh Allen had to do it. Eventually Lamar had to do it. Like, these guys, eventually you get there. But when you're just trying to get this guy to learn how to play the game and be what he is as an NFL quarterback, lean into what he's good at. What he's good at is being a little bit crazy and throwing down the field. And he's definitely got the army athleticism to do it. So I love that. If they could just do what Flacco did, but have some element of quarterback run game attached to it now, because Drake May is a really good athlete.
Yes.
It's a pretty nice little offense.
I'm going to miss watching Joe Flacco roll out like an 18 wheeler, try to turn launch that thing. Okay. Let's take a quick break, come back and talk about the other quarterbacks taken in the first round.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app. It's an empire. 21 and older, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, DC, Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do. Big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MinaShow.
Okay. Michael Penix Jr., let's go. This is tricky because we don't know when he's going to play. He's not going to play year one. So in some ways, we can talk about the players who are on the team, the scheme, Zach Robinson. But the reality is we might not see Michael Penix Jr. at the helm of this for 1-2 years. Now, entirely possible Kirk Cousins gets hurt and we see him earlier than that. So let's start there, actually, because I think that's an interesting question. If Kirk Cousins, let's say, because I think we all assume, by the way, that we know what kind of offense it's going to be with Kirk Cousins. It's going to be very similar to what we saw in Minnesota. Zach Robinson comes from the Sean McVay tree, as did Kevin O'Connell. The personnel, too, you know, right? The zone blocking offensive line, the skill players that they have, a lot of shared DNA there. We get to the skill players in a second because, you know, that is sort of the one a major difference. So Kirk Cousins, play action, under center boot, you know, well, actually, it'll be different personnel groupings with this group, but yes. Do you do the same thing with Michael Penix Jr.? What happens? What if you're Zach Robinson, it's week 8, Kirk suffered some sort of injury. What do you do with Michael Penix Jr. and this offense?
This is okay. So there were like 1,000 reasons that this pick was completely baffling to me. But one of them was for this exact scenario is that like, yeah. So in my mind, I was like, okay, if they're dead set on drafting some sort of developmental guy, wouldn't JJ McCarthy make more sense? Because he makes sense for this whole, like, you know, the Kirk Shanahan McVay. Yeah. These Kirk too, with a little bit of juice, you know, maybe that's what you get. And so like, you wouldn't really have to change the offense. You could run all the same stuff. Michael Penix to me is more of like a throwback, like Bruce Arians, like type of quarterback. Like he's like, you run the 2015 Palmer offense, you run the 2021, whatever year they won the Super Bowl, the Bucks offense with Brady. Like that's the style of offense you run, where you are like, everything is past 15 yards. We are throwing down the field as much as possible. Outbreakers outside the numbers, like, you know, deep go balls, that sort of stuff. That to me is more the type of quarterback that Michael Penix is. And truthfully, you don't need a lot of play action for that. You don't even necessarily need to get under center a lot for that. It's just like we're slinging it down the field and we're throwing outside the numbers. It's like almost the antithesis in a lot of ways of what the Kirk offense is supposed to be. And that just makes it like,
I have a theory, which is that Raheem Morris and I mean, we don't know who made this pick, whatever. But I do have a theory that part of the reason they were behind it is that Raheem Morris and Zach Robinson were with the Rams and they saw a little bit of Stafford in Michael Penix, even the unconventional throwing motion. And he came and they did their visit with him or whatever. I can't remember that he didn't come for like a top 30 visit and he was slinging that thing around and they were like, yeah, we want, this is like, we don't want Kirk too. We want the Stafford hedge. Like we want the different kind of quarterback.
And they even said that, I think there was some like report where it was like, you know, someone said that Michael Penix, like, you know, there hasn't been a quarterback who's thrown the ball like this since Matthew Stafford. And I was just like, Caleb and Drake are in this class. Like, that's crazy thing to say.
We're not here to relitigate the pick. We're just trying to understand what kind of offense they would run. But I have a feeling that they went through that transition where, like, they hit the wall with Goff and they were like, we need a quarterback who can do stuff on his own, who doesn't have to be babied. And they liked the idea of the hedge quarterback being that kind of guy, even for all the other reasons not to do the pick. But to your point, like, it is just, it's very different. It would be very different. Penix is such an interesting player because I talked about this a little bit when we talked about him as a prospect, very low pressure to sack rate, but there's a multitude of reasons for that. It's not really the sort of, it's certainly not because of mobility. Let's start there. It's not like, you know, or Anthony Richardson had this kind of like great feel for evading or even like being so strong he could shake off of pressure. With Penix, some of it had to do with the fact that he does get the ball out quickly. And I think that's something that is really great about him, and something I think as an NFL coach, I imagine it's, again, another reason why I think coaches liked him so much, is he's not going to take dumb sacks. He is going to throw that thing away if it needs to be thrown, or he will check it down. He does that, I think, at a really high level. And that's something that, like, you know, players like Justin Fields never got as good as they needed to be at. So you put him behind this Falcons offensive line that I think we all agree is good. And like you said, you just kind of ask him to cook. Husky's offense did run a fair amount of play action. Some of that had to do with this Ryan Grubbs style, I think, and the way he put plays together, and as well as their personnel. So I wouldn't be surprised if you do actually see a fair amount of that with him, but I think it looks pretty different. I think to go to the players now, Drake London would be a huge beneficiary of a Michael Penix run Falcons offense, because I think he's really underrated. I think he can win downfield. And I think Michael Penix Jr., like Drake May, will trust his receivers to win, and he will air it out, and he will push the ball. So I like how this group of skill players fits with them. I think he would get a lot out of them.
I think London in particular, because London, it's not one for one, but there's a lot of London and Odunze overlap. And like you said, Penix was very, very willing to trust Odunze at basically every stop. He didn't care if it was double coverage sometimes. He was like, well, I know where my guy is. I know where I need to put it for him to go get it. And Drake London is very much that style of receiver, where his ball skills are just, I'm glad you said he's underrated. He, to me, is like either knocking on the door of top 10 or already there. Like, he is a phenomenal receiver. It's just that he hasn't had the quarterback play to, like, get the numbers where everybody's willing to embrace it. I do think, though, if Michael Penix had to play, probably the biggest, you know, benefit is to Drake London. Because Penix, I think, like you said, like, even if maybe he doesn't walk in and immediately, you know, he's, you know, like I said, Herbert Stroud level processor or whatever as a rookie, he is at least going to get the ball out. And if he's going to get the ball out, he's going to probably be throwing it a lot to Drake London. And so I do think if he had to play, that's not the worst guy to have to go, you know, screw it, I need somebody to go find the ball for me.
So again, reception perception, really useful. This tracks with what I thought would be true. Drake London, second highest success rate of any receiver on out routes, seventh highest, it looks like, on corners. Michael Penix Jr. loves throwing those outbreaking routes, and he has the arm strength to do so. So yeah, I think Drake London would cook. I think he'll be fine with Kirk too, but that's a whole other conversation. Okay. So we'll see with Penix what happens. But, you know, that one's obviously kind of weird. JJ McCarthy is the easiest to discuss here of any of these quarterbacks, because I think we all know exactly what kind of offense he should be running, because it is pretty similar to what we saw him do in college. And he now walks into the best situation. I mean, the Bears could be better, but, you know, new play caller, we'll see. And Odunze, as much as we all love him, he is a prospect. JJ McCarthy gets to play with the best receiver in the NFL for a play caller in Kevin O'Connell, who I think is fantastic, behind an offensive line that I think we all agree is very good, with one of the better left tackles in football, with one of the best tight ends in the NFL, TJ Hockenson, and a rushing attack that added Aaron Jones, who to me is hand in glove with this offense. A dream scenario for JJ. We all know wide zone, then boot, play action. Play the hits. Kirk to electric bugaloo. I guess my question for you is this. Is there anything that should be different for JJ as he, you know, because, you know, it's easy for us to say, oh my God, this guy looks exactly like, you know, these, it's very obvious what kind of offense you should be running. I think that's true. However, you know, coming from offense in Michigan, where he was obviously not asked to throw the ball very much and had some deficiencies in his game that are why he was ultimately the fourth quarterback taken. He is an imperfect prospect, not just because of small sample size, lack of touch throws on tape, some issues with mechanics that people smarter than me have explained. Maybe you can get into that, but I guess, is there anything that you think would help him ease that transition? Because he's basically being thrown the keys to a Lamborghini.
Yeah. I think the thing is, you just kind of have to wind the clock back on what this offense is, which makes sense. I mean, Kirk has been playing for 10 years or whatever, and JJ McCarthy is walking in as a rookie, but like, Jared Goff, I think, is another example of this, where like when the the Rams, Jared Goff, like McVay, all that stuff was coming up. It was a pretty simple offense. It was like, we're doing the wide zone stuff. We're going to run play action. And when we get into gun, which is not going to be a lot because that's not what we want our quarterback to do, we're kind of just going to go into empty and have these like two or three core concepts that we run and just pray to God that he can execute them. That to me is kind of how it should be with JJ McCarthy, is you simplify the passing offense in basically every way. You don't ask him to carry the load a lot. Like, you don't want him throwing 38 times a game the way that Sam Howell was asked to do this year. You want him throwing 24 times a game, and half of them are going to play action. A couple of them are going to be this empty stuff, which is very simple, kind of just lets him see everything before, you know, before the snap. And then you only ask him to like do the true drop back stuff a handful of times a game. And that, I think, is where the difference is between what Kirk is now and what JJ is going to be immediately, is that Kirk early in his career obviously wasn't the greatest, you know, true pure drop back passer, three step, five step. Yes. He really grew into being one of the better, just true shotgun drop back passers in the league, especially playing in that like 1 to 15 yard area. You know, he's never really going to throw down the field the way that Josh Allen is going to in those scenarios, but just playing the 1 to 15, like do the right thing, be on time. He got really, really dang good. JJ is probably not going to be that good the first couple of years. And that's not even because he can't do it. It's just like, yeah, he's a rookie and he's coming from an offense that didn't ask him to do all that much. And even when he did play from gun a lot, they did a really, really good job at Michigan of giving him like very simple man zone indicators with their motion. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think Kevin O'Connell is going to be able to do that, but that's definitely going to be have to be part of the offense as well. So I think they can do a lot of the Kirk stuff. Just wind the clock back a little bit. Let's pretend this is year three Kirk instead of what year 10 Kirk has become.
I do want to mention the other receivers, by the way. Addison, I really love Jordan Addison. I think he's a really good player. And then behind him, you have Brandon Powell, who's kind of small, fast guy. Kill Harry, who's the big, slow guy. Just kidding, that's mean. Trent Sherfield. So it's a mix of guys. Yeah, I really like your point about sort of setting expectations. And he could be better than Kirk, but he probably won't be right at the beginning. And that's okay. That's okay. He is going to inspire, however, so much discord. He, to me, like, if you thought Purdy was toxic, the discourse around him, I could see JJ, the discourse, oh my God, like fourth quarterback taken. He's the best of all of them just because the offense will look really good. I could see that happening. Also, he's got Michigan fans behind him. So that's,
there's always another one, right? It's Jared Goff, and then it's Tua, and then it's Purdy, and then JJ McCarthy's creeping up. He's walking up to the podium here.
I came to really like him as a prospect as the process went along. Not more than the top three, but he's definitely got something to him. I think what's going to be interesting for me too is just to see how much his athleticism factors in at the NFL level, because he can move, man. And I'll be curious to see, that is the biggest differentiator between him and Kirk, obviously. And I'll be interested in seeing how O'Connell factors that into his offense, because it's so different from the quarterbacks that he's worked with.
As you guys know, NFL teams can make mistakes when it comes to spending money. For example, cover your ears, Broncos fans. Russell Wilson has a $53 million cap hit this year. But unlike the Walton family, I'm guessing people listening to this podcast don't have millions to spend. Maybe some of you do. I don't know. Get at me. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and they decided to do something better. They found their own way to make a beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of other big brands. So you never wonder if you overpaid. They have customizable delivery options for scheduled refills as low as $2, which is half of what you pay for big brands. Convenient subscription options that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best does not mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/MINA. That's harrys.com/MINA for a $3 trial set.
All right. Bo Nix, sort of the forgotten man in all this draft discourse. But he's starting, man. Bo Nix. In our Dynasty League with Nate Tice and Danny Kelly, and our friend Jackson Bevins, and this, yeah, Nate beat me in the finals last year. I'm still kind of sore about that. I am very low on quarterbacks. I have my two starting quarterbacks are Jared Goff, which is amazing, and Derek Carr. And I had a choice between, but I'm also, my receiving group is aging. I had a choice between Bo Nix, Xavier Worthy, Keon Coleman, and A.D. Mitchell. Can you guess who I took?
I mean, I don't know if I did. You take maybe Worthy just
because he's playing Mahomes? I took Worthy, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, at that point, you just lean on the back.
I also have Kelsey, so I kind of wanted a Kelsey hedge.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Sort of, yeah, but I was like, Bo Nix, you're gonna start. I should probably do this, and I just I couldn't do it. So he is probably gonna start, although he's competing with Jared Sinner, I guess. Let's talk about the situation before we get to the offense. I think people really mischaracterize what the offense is gonna look like. Well, first, let's talk about the players. Offensive line, I'd say middle of the pack NFL. People keep talking about Garrett, but they're like, Garrett Bowles isn't long for Denver. Why? I don't understand why, but.
I don't know. Like, he's a perfectly fine left tackle. Yeah, like, I don't know why they would move on from him unless he just keeps getting hurt or something. I don't know.
The receiver group at the moment is, of course, Cortland Sutton, Josh Reynolds, Marvin Mims, Tim Patrick's coming back. They drafted Troy Franklin. Did anyone ever explain why Troy Franklin fell so much in the draft? Was there any other than like him being like small and dropping the football occasionally?
I mean, he had a really bad outing at the combine, right? And like, he just looked sloppy. He looked really skinny.
But that's not fourth round tape.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't. It was because that's the thing. Like, his tape was closer to like, you know, maybe bottom of the second or whatever. The fact that he fell all the way that he did. Even I was like slightly lower on Franklin, and I was baffled that he fell.
Yeah,
it just made sense.
I love a rookie quarterback, rookie wide receiver reunion, and Bo Nix was truly the beneficiary of Troy Franklin in college. So that's nice. Tight end group: Dulcich, Troutman. Running backs: you got Javonte Williams, P. Ryan. They drafted Audric Estime, which is a pick I liked.
My guy,
great value. Okay. How do you regard this cast before we get to the offense and Sean Payton? Especially let me rephrase this. We just talked about five like different casts. Where would you put the Broncos?
If I'm including Sean Payton as like, you know, part of what's going on.
No, we're just talking about the players.
Just the players. I mean, it's probably better than New England's, because even if this receiving core to me also doesn't have like a true star, at least a lot more of the role players are like veterans for the most part. And it's like, okay, I could kind of trust at least like Tim Patrick and Sutton. I think I can kind of trust them there.
The New England would,
yeah.
Patriots fans would gnaw off their like half of their fingers for Cortland Sutton.
I do want to say that really quickly. I feel like people forget how good Cortland Sutton is.
I remember last year he made like probably five of the eight coolest catches in the NFL.
And like, I was comparing Odunze this year to Cortland Sutton, and people were like, he's way better than that. And I was
Sutton's
like,
really good.
What? Sutton is a really good player. Like, maybe not in the, you know, a true all pro category, but he's pretty dang good. So I would say it's better than New England, not better than Chicago. I don't think it's better than Minnesota. Yeah. I don't think it's better than Atlanta. I think I might say it's better than Washington, though, because I do think the offensive line is just so bad in Washington that them having enough in Denver is like, okay, I can give them the edge there. So it's fine. It's good enough for a rookie quarterback to like not look completely miserable.
Totally agree. I think also the offensive line will look a lot better with Bo Nix than Russell Wilson, because Bo Nix, I'll tell you what, that guy gets rid of the football. He gets it out quick, real quick. Which I guess brings us to the offense. Everybody just keeps yelling Drew Brees. I think,
like, be serious. Like, no.
So let's talk about what Bo Nix is good at and sort of use that to explore, like, how, if you were Sean, because Sean Payton is also, that's the other thing about Payton, like, he's called so many different offenses, we've seen so many different iterations of it, from what we saw last year in Denver to the end of Drew Brees' career to the beginning of Drew Brees' career to when he was working with backup quarterbacks like Teddy and Taysom Hill. So it's been very different. So Bo Nix, very quick release. And I have a thought about that I want to bring up, but about what I would do with him offensively. He has what I would describe as functional athleticism. He throws really well on the move. I would argue better on the move than stationary. Yeah,
sometimes, right?
But he's super, super accurate throwing on the move. And he makes really nice. It's not just, you know, 8 yard throws, he throws downfield on the move quite well, I think. So obviously you want to bake that into the offense. Arm strength is fine. I don't think he obviously doesn't compare with the top guys in that we've been talking about, the top three or so, four even really. They did design run stuff with him in college. I don't know how much of that you can do in the NFL necessarily. He's fairly accurate, I would say. I think he is pretty, it's interesting. I was about to say pro ready is a tricky one with him because the offense he ran in Oregon was so wildly different from what you see in the NFL in a lot of ways. But I don't think you have to baby him necessarily. So given all of that, I guess before we get to the, like, what do you see as his strengths and weaknesses? And if you were a play caller, what would you build around those?
I think you kind of nailed most of it. Like his quick release, probably the quickest in the class. I mean, maybe Caleb's up there too, because Caleb is just, I mean, anything you can do with an arm, he does it all. I think accuracy wise, he is pretty good pretty much across the board. Like even in my accuracy charting, I don't have it pulled up right now, but he was one of the more accurate quarterbacks in the class to every single level. Like he can, when he triggers on stuff, he makes all the throws. Yes. Again, you know, maybe Oregon made it a little easy for him at times. And, you know, maybe there are some throws he just wasn't willing to make because he's not a naturally aggressive guy, at least at Oregon. At Auburn, he very much was. But at Oregon, he really wasn't. And so on the throws he did make, very accurate for the most part. Especially some of his touch placement was actually really nice. Right. Like you mentioned, on the move was pretty good. And then he's, as a decision maker, I think on throws where it's like apparent you can make the throw pre-snap, if that makes sense. Like just basing off like, okay, quick game, I can throw off this leverage or RPO, like that sort of stuff. He's a really good decision maker. And then even late in plays, I think at Oregon, he got good at just like, okay, man, don't put the ball in danger. Like, let's just get to the next down. Let's throw it away. Let's scramble if I have to. And so I think that stuff is valuable. And that, I think, is where the pro readiness comes in. It's like, okay, he's not going to walk in and just ruin the offense. And I think that is valuable. If I were calling the plays, I would do a lot of what the Dolphins have done with Tua.
I was just like, about to say that. Yeah. When I said quick release, I have a thought on that. It's the downfield RPOs, man. Yes. That ball comes 100%. Out. Sometimes it was out so fast. I was like, damn, dude, like really impressive.
100%.
It's not too dissimilar from Tua's.
It's really not. I floated the idea during the draft season. If the Dolphins aren't all the way in on Tua, they should consider Bo Nix Sunday.
Make
too.
Dolphins
obviously.
I will say one thing Tua is really is better at throwing with anticipation and eye manipulation. Yeah. But that's something he will have to learn in the NFL.
Right, 100%. I do think Tua is better at that stuff. Like Tua has a little bit more, you know, it's mostly a point and shoot offense, but Tua does like bring a little bit of sauce to it every now and then with what he can do with his eyes and stuff. Whereas like with Bo Nix, it's a little bit more like vanilla stock standard point and shoot type stuff, which with as accurate as he is and with as good as his release is, that's totally fine. But it's maybe not, doesn't have quite the same ceiling that Tua has had with the Dolphins. So I think in terms of if we're relating it to like Sean Payton offenses, it will probably look most similar to like the Teddy offenses. Like I think people are imagining the Drew Brees offenses. I don't think Nix is ever going to like operate at that level. Like people forget, like Brees was truly like
he was top a three machine. Ever.
Yes, also. That guy was and different.
The accuracy. I mean, we can be like, yeah, Bo Nix is accurate. No. Like that is another level of ball placement with Drew Brees. We're losing recipes, Derek. We're losing recipes.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, okay, Teddy was also accurate, and that's more the type of accuracy that Nix is. But Brees was just like literally
the most accurate quarterback in the NFL of all time. Like, yeah.
Yes, you're right. Exactly. And yeah, so when people are like,
everybody relax. Relax. Yeah,
let's chill out here. Let's bring up some normal comparisons before we compare to Hall of Famers. Exactly. Like people just do that. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think I'm actually Broncos fans. I am a huge Sean Payton. Like, that's why I said leave Payton out, because I think when you factor in Payton, the Denver situation rises. Because I think Payton, too, like people have kind of, we're losing recipes, people have forgotten how good he is because he had to run the Russell Wilson offense or a variation of it, or basically put bumpers on it for 2 years. And I am actually very excited to see what he does. You know, does he sort of, do we see a new version that we haven't yet seen from him? Because he's a guy who's, you know, extremely, extremely like dialed into what's happening around the league and borrows ideas and is very creative and obviously very smart. So I'm actually very intrigued to see. I know I was like a little bit hot, lower on Knicks. I was like 12 really or whatever, but I can see why Sean Payton looked at him and thought, yeah, I can work with that. Like, I can do something with this.
Right. And I think the difference is like, sure, Knicks is limited in different ways from Russell Wilson, but at least these are limitations that like Sean is kind of opting into in a way. Whereas I think with Russ, he was kind of like forced to deal with this thing. And I think by the end of the year, it's very clear he had like a degree of contempt for how he was forced to run the offense. At least with Knicks, it's like, okay, maybe there's some stuff he can't do, but I see enough of what I want to do that I can live with this.
Okay, we're going to wrap really quickly with Spencer Rattler, who is not likely to play. He was fifth round, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Very, very, very funny draft pick because... I loved it. So Saints fans, I don't think I've talked about the Saints draft. I think I tweeted this, but I didn't talk about the podcast. I thought the first three picks were awesome. Like, I think, you know, you get Fuanga and McKinstry. I know there's value questions about the McKinstry and maybe they gave up too much, but like those are two players who fit a need and style. So great. And then Rattler. Yeah. Like getting a developmental quarterback in the fifth round with that kind of arm talent is absolutely a smart thing to do for an NFL franchise, especially one with a quarterback who got injured last year and appears to be in the downslope of his career. I did mention I have him in, I might have to get Rattler as a hedge, by the way. So let's talk about that. It's funny because you could not have a quarterback who is more different from Drew Brees in literally every possible way. Yeah. So I guess my only question for you is, let's say you're Pete Carmichael. They retained Pete Carmichael, right? Yeah, I think they did. Yeah. Much to Saints fans' chagrin. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's week six. Derek Carr's out. What do you do?
So listen, here's the thing. When during the draft process, you know, people would always ask, you know, because Rattler wasn't going to go first round. So it was just like, you know, you could kind of place him anywhere in your mind. It was a little bit of a fantasy land. I kept saying, like, imagine what Spencer Rattler could be sitting 2 years behind Matthew Stafford playing with Sean McVay. Like, that is ideally what I want it to look like. Where Rattler, the two things that Rattler is good at, obviously he has some issues. He sprays some balls. He's probably too aggressive at times. Like, he makes some boneheaded errors. He's going to take sacks because he's not the athlete that he thinks that he is. There's a little bit of Baker Mayfield there. But what he is really good at, he's very, very tough in the pocket, and he's very willing to like move with his eyes up in the pocket, like create these little spaces in the pocket. And that dude is very, very willing to make throws, and he has obviously the arm to do it. He probably had the best arm and like arm elasticity in the class outside of Caleb, obviously. Like, he's probably the closest to it in terms of that. So that was why I wanted to see him with the Rams, because it was like, what is Stafford good at? He's good at hanging in there, moving around the pocket, making tough throws, and his arm is incredible. So I kind of wanted to see him run that style of offense, which to your point would be very different from Derek Carr, who is very much like, I am going to throw the shortest route possible on most snaps until it's the fourth quarter and I realize I have to throw a go ball. Do you know how many times that happened, by the way, this year? I swear every other week, the Saints game, it was like, okay, they're down by 14 for the entire game. And then middle of the fourth quarter, Derek Carr's like, I'm going to find Rashid Shaheed. It's like, well, you could have done that two quarters ago. Like, what are we doing?
Rashid Shaheed, who averages like 40 yards a catch. Yes. By the way, great for Rattler. Olave, obviously, very good player. Yeah, we'll see if he plays. But I liked the pick. I like the player. I thought he was fun to watch. He played behind maybe the worst offensive line of any of these quarterbacks. God. And that's saying a lot because some of these quarterbacks play by some pretty bad ones in college. So for him, the Saints are certainly an upgrade. All right. Well, that's it. We're not going to talk about Michael.
Yeah, I don't think we have to do that. I think we're okay.
Derek, this has been super fun. Before we wrap, I brought back content recommendation. You can recommend anything to our listeners, any piece of audio, a book, an article, a movie, a TV show, something you're watching on YouTube. What do you got for us?
Yeah, so I actually just finished reading, maybe a couple weeks ago, The Monster of Florence, which is basically about a series of double murders over the course of like two decades in Florence, Italy. Ooh. The author himself ends up being like part of the investigation. It is a fascinating book, start to finish. I read like half of it in one day at a certain point. It is the
Monster
fantastic.
Of Florence?
The Monster of Florence, yeah.
What's the name of the author?
Douglas Preston, I think. And okay. He did it with some other co-author that I can't remember the name of right now. But yeah, very, very good book. Good.
Okay, I'm going to look into that. Okay, for me, I just started a book, but I'm going to wait until I'm a little bit further along to get into it. I'm going to mention a show that so I feel like there's all these Apple shows that nobody watches. Do you subscribe to Apple TV?
I don't know.
There's just like a zillion shows. So one that I watched not too long ago that was recommended to me by my friend Chris Ryan is called Criminal Record, and it is like a kind of standard fare British detective show. I love all that stuff, but this one, there's a little bit of complication to it because there's like it's really about the relationship between these two police detectives, one of whom is Cush Jumbo, who's excellent in The Good Fight. The other is this British guy, I think his name is Peter Capaldi, who I guess was Doctor who is like maybe the best actor I've ever seen. I honestly, he's so amazing in this show. He really carries it. And if you like British detective stuff, it's contemporary, you should definitely check it out. That'll do it for today. Next week, we will be back with a mailbag with Dominique Foxworth because I will be in DC. So we're going to tape that. So I'm going to put out a tweet asking for mailbag questions. If you guys are listening and you have a question about the draft, your team, offseason, whatever, feel free to reply to that tweet I put out. Also, if you are so inclined and you have never done so, please leave us a rating and review. Maybe a review just letting us know how much you love the show, but also like what you'd like to hear about in the offseason. I like getting ideas that way. And this one other piece of news, this show is now airing on Wednesdays, not Thursdays, Wednesdays on ESPN2 at 2 p.m. Eastern, I believe. So set your DVRs if you like to listen that way. Otherwise, thank you, as always, to everyone at Omaha Productions, the producers of this show, Kirsten Sofecki, and the work we get from Anthony Jimenez, Owen Saylor, Jack Foster. You can also check it out on youtube.com/@Nina Kimes.